Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the November 2025 meeting of the State Coastal Conservancy. I'm Doug Bosco, and I chair this illustrious board of superstars who I will now introduce. On my far right is Julie Alves, who is representing the Natural Resources Agency. Welcome, Julie. And to my immediate right is Michelle Perrault, who's representing the Department of Finance. To my left is Jeremiah Hallisey, who is appointed by the governor. And then in television land on Zoom, we have Kara Woodruff. Kara, welcome. Kara's almost always with us. And Mars Gutierrez Groudon is in Brazil. Mars, welcome. Mars is attending the UN Climate Summit there. I think you must be representing the United States. I don't know anyone in the administration that's representing us there. So,
civil society is trying to step in.
You'll do a good job, I'm sure. Next to Mars is Joy Sterling. Joyce is appointed by the State Senate. Joy, I should say. And then Megan Harmon, who is the chair of the State Coastal Commission, and by virtue of that is a member of our board. Amy Hutzel is our executive officer. And who else should I introduce here? Oh, and Ryan Berghoff is our counsel for this meeting. Paul Johnson is our board clerk. Anyone that would like to speak on any item that's on the agenda or not on the agenda, please fill out a card and give it to Paul, and we'll be sure that you're recognized at the appropriate time. Amy, would you please share any logistical information that you'd like to share?
Yes, I will add to the public comment. So we're meeting today in the Oakland State Building. If you're here in person and you want to speak on an item on the agenda, please fill out a speaker card. It's in the back of the room. Hand it to Paul Johnson, who will pass it on to Chairman Bosco. And this includes grantees and project partners, anyone besides staff who want to speak on an item. Be sure to indicate which item you want to speak on the card. If you're watching the meeting remotely, you have two options. We have a webcast and we have Zoom. If you want to speak on an item, you need to be on the Zoom. If you don't plan to speak, you can watch the meeting on the webcast. If you're watching on the webcast now and you want to speak on an item, go to our website at scc.ca.gov, click on Meetings and Notices, and register to speak. If you have not done so already, you will be emailed a Zoom link. On Zoom, use the Raise Hand button, or if you're using your phone, you can press *9. To speak at the appropriate time on the agenda. And we will call on people and move them over to the panelist screen to make comments. This takes a little while and you see a spinning circle, so give it a moment. You have to unmute yourself to speak. We cannot unmute you. We'll do comments in the room first and then any comments on Zoom. Spanish translation is available for the meeting if you join by Zoom. There's a globe icon at the bottom of the Zoom screen where you can choose Spanish translation. And those are the logistics. Back to you.
Sorry. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Harmon? Ms. Alves?
Yes, here.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grodich?
Here.
Ms. Perrault?
Present.
Mr. Hallisey?
Present.
Ms. Sterling?
Here.
Ms. Harmon? Chair Bosco?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Okay, thank you. Next, we'll have the approval of the minutes of our September 18th, 2025 meeting. Do I hear a motion that we approve the minutes? Ms. Sterling, do you want to move? And Ms. Gutierrez-Browden, second? Please call the roll poll.
Ms. Alves?
Abstain.
Ms. Gutierrez-Gradich?
Yes, aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Abstain.
Mr. Hallacy?
Yes.
Ms. Sterling? Chair Bosco?
Aye.
It looks like she's frozen. Yes, the minutes are approved. All right. Oh, Ms. Sterling, do you approve of the minutes?
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
I know Joy likes to think over these things carefully, and appreciate having your approval of our minutes, especially since you participated. next, we will have the consent items. Those are matters that are projects less than $500,000 or continuations of previously approved projects. Are there any public comments on the consent items?
No public comment at this time.
Okay. Are there any board comments on them? If not, do we have a motion to approve the consent items?
So moved.
Okay. Ms. Perrault moves. Mr. Hallacy seconds. Please call the roll poll.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallacy?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right, the consent items are approved.
Okay, the consent calendar is approved. Next, we have our executive officer's report. Amy Hutzel will do that.
Great, thank you, Chair Bosco. We have three informational items and one action item on the EO report. And first up, Taylor Samuelson, our public information officer, will provide a legislative report.
Good morning. There I'm on. Good morning, Chair Bosco, members of the board. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Taylor Samuelson. I'm the public information officer for the Conservancy. And one of my other duties is to keep an eye on legislation at the state level, along with Evan, our deputy executive officer. So to that end, we've prepared a report of the bills that we've been keeping an eye on during the session that's just concluded, starting with chaptered legislation. AB 43 indefinitely extends the CNRA secretary's obligation to take steps to add a river removed from the National Wild and Scenic River System to the state's Wild and Scenic River System. SB 392 authorizes East Bay Regional Parks District to establish and administer the East Bay Hills Conservation Program. SB 427, Habitat Conservation Fund, it extends the transfer of general funds to the Habitat Conservation Fund by 5 years. It was set to expire in 2030. Now it expires 2035. We get exactly $4 million a year from that fund. It's been an important source of project funding for us. SB 470, Laird, thank you, Kara. This bill extends our ability to meet like this through a hybrid teleconference public meeting until 2030. It was set to expire at the start of 2026. And SB 727, the McGuire bill on the Great Redwood Trail that just made some administrative fixes to the agency to help it run more smoothly. I'm going to skip over the two-year bills. We'll keep an eye on those to see if they pop up in the next session, but for now they are in stasis. And hopping down to the vetoed bills, only two to mention, AB 399, which was Assemblymember Borner's, I think, third attempt to authorize the Coastal Commission to require coastal development permit applicants to incorporate blue carbon demonstration projects into their permit mitigations, and AB 766, which would have required state agencies to include data analysis and inclusive practices to more effectively advance racial equity in their strategic plans. So those were a summary of the bills that we watched this year, and we will be keeping an eye out on things as the session reconvenes in January. I'm happy to take any questions.
Taylor, what was the Wild River legislation?
So this was legislation, it effectively extends the CNRA secretary's obligation to move rivers that the federal government might be kicking out of their Wild and Scenic Rivers program and taking steps to move them into the state's Wild and Scenic Rivers program.
Is that an automatic thing, or is it just a procedure that the state takes?
The bill requires him to take steps to add it, so presumably there's still process involved in doing that. But this, you know, I assume that when it was first introduced during the first Trump administration, it was protecting, and this extension is also protecting our rivers.
Oh, good. Any other questions for Taylor? Turn this off.
And then next up is Evan Borgness-Sloan, our Deputy Executive Officer. She's going to run us through our annual financial report.
All right. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. I'm Evan Borgness-Sloan, Deputy Executive Officer of the Coastal Conservancy, and I will be providing a summary of this year's financial report. As a reminder, staff have presented this report every year since 2012. The report is typically presented at the first meeting of the state's fiscal year, which runs from July 1st to June 30th. But given some of the budget delays with the budget bill junior for Proposition 4 coming out in September, I decided to wait until this meeting to provide a more full overview of the Conservancy's budget. The report is divided into two sections. First, the project funding, and then the support funding. Given the episodic nature of our funding, the support section also includes a five-year roadmap on how we plan to spend the current support dollars. In terms of project funding, the Conservancy is in a great position given the passage of the 2024 climate bond in November of last year, where we were originally allocated about $950 million of the bond to be spent over the next 5 to 10 years. The Conservancy's allocations include funds for wildfire resilience, dam removal, coastal resilience, and coastal and combined flood risk management, among other programs. In terms of the Prop 4 dollars that the Conservancy currently has to spend in fiscal year 25, the wildfire funding came all at once as a part of Assembly Bill 100, which was signed by the governor on April 14th of this year. This provided the Conservancy $30.9 million for wildfire resilience projects. This was the full bonds allocation of wildfire resilience funding for us, so we don't expect to receive additional Prop 4 funding for wildfire in subsequent years. The other Proposition 4 funding programs for FY25 were provided to us as a part of Senate Bill 105, also known as Budget Bill Junior, which was signed by the governor on September 17th of this year. This provided the Conservancy with $263 million of Prop 4 funds for FY25. This budget bill included a brand new allocation for us, which was $50 million for the Great Redwood Trail as well. It was a little fun looking back over the past 5 years, considering the governor and the legislature have been appropriating significant levels of general fund and greenhouse gas reduction fund to the Coastal Conservancy to support nature-based climate adaptation and sea level rise resilience projects. The total from those packages and all of our other funding sources over the past 5 years has been over $1 billion. So I'm proud that our staff has been able to work with partners and move such a large amount of funding to excellent projects that are helping the state restore coastal ecosystems, increase coastal access, and adapt to climate change. In fiscal year 24, the Conservancy authorized $198 million for projects. This was the tail end of the General Fund and Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund authorizations, which are now nearly all have been approved by the board in for the two packages we received in FY22 and FY23. I'm also proud to say that since we began tracking under our 2023 to 2027 strategic plan, 68% of the funding awarded by the Conservancy has gone to projects that benefit systemically excluded communities. A small note about some delegated authority. The executive officer has delegated authority to add state or federal grant funds to board authorized projects when the expenditures were anticipated in the original staff recommendation for the project. It does not require adoption. Oh, those projects must not require new adoption of CEQA findings. And on page 8 of your report, you'll see that the there's a list of two projects that we used this delegation for, and we're required to report that to the board each year. Moving on to our support budget, the Conservancy continues to be in a very good position as we are still utilizing funding from the Governor's General Fund and GGRF climate packages and will continue to do so while projects are funded by those sources and are carried out. The Conservancy's support budget in FY25 is about $14.4 million, with 75 to 80% of that going towards staff salaries and budgets, and benefits, I mean. Outside grants and reimbursements account for about 8% of our support budget. Last year, the Conservancy was awarded $1.2 million for support costs from our incoming grants. So it's an important part of our budget. Since the Conservancy does not have a single stable source of operating funding, for the past 20 years, we have prepared and updated a conceptual 5-year plan. You can find that plan on page 12 of your report. The Conservancy's support budget remains largely flat with an approximately 3% annual increase to account for increased costs of salaries and benefits. This year's plan continues to allocate the recent general fund and GGRF funding, the one-time support appropriations over the next 6 years, which will require approved reappropriations. Now that many other bonds we have been relying on support dollars that are closing, so bonds like Prop 40 and Prop 50 are closing, and as we spend down our general fund and our GGRF funding, Prop 4 will be critical to fill gaps over the next 5 years. Regardless, we have a robust support budget and are in a very good position compared to previous years prior to climate packages. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions?
I have a question, but just a comment.
Yeah.
I just want to thank the Conservancy staff. I will note, and you didn't say it, but you did participate in our statewide vacancy identification, and I know you guys gave up staff for that. So just a note of appreciation, because I know sometimes it's hard when it's a smaller, definitely our smaller agencies and departments. So just appreciate it that you guys are continuing to work lean and figure out ways to either leverage your grant funding and such for support. So that's all.
Thanks for mentioning that. And I talk about that on page 10 if anyone's interested to see.
As the source of funds for support diminishes on our other areas, can we use Prop 4 funds to augment that?
Yes. So on the support plan, you'll see that we have sufficient amounts from all of our funding, even as Prop 40 and Prop 50 are not included, and even as Prop 84 and Prop 68 stop in FY27, we still have enough funding and robust funding for including, like, essentially a $500,000 increase over each year. But again, that requires reappropriations of prior support dollars. If we don't have those reappropriations, then we're in the red earlier.
Yeah, Evan is getting in the reappropriation plug. but yes, we can. We are allowed to take a percentage of bond funding, including Proposition 4, for our support budget, so we can administer the bond funding. So Prop 4 came at a very good time for us and really will be an important part of our support budget for the next 5 to 10 years.
Is that a little unusual for one proposition to allow funding for another?
Yeah. All of them have allowed small percentages to the agencies and departments in order to administer the projects, because we can't do it without staff.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Thank you. Oh, well,
thank you.
Amy, continue with your report.
Yeah. Thank you. And huge thanks to Taylor and Evan. And I'm going to present now. So we are really happy about Proposition 4, as you could tell from that report and from the discussion, and excited to move Proposition 4 projects forward. Can you pull up the PowerPoint? So this bond, there is one little wrinkle with this bond that's different than previous bonds. Oh, thank you. So we need to adopt regulations in order to administer this bond. Let me see. I'm gonna pause and see if this advances. Which way do you think I should be pointing it?
Is it on?
That's a good question. Okay, it's on. Oh, there we go. Oh, and the font all changed. It looks very, you typed it on the typewriter. She went old school. So,
cost savings.
Yeah, cost savings. We've gone back to typewriters. So, efficiencies. Previous bonds, all the previous bonds we have administered have had an exemption from rulemaking. So, the shorthand is saying an APA exemption, the Administrative Procedures Act. Proposition 4 does not have an exemption from rulemaking. We are allowed to use the emergency regulation process, however. If we had to go through regular rulemaking, it would be a year or two to get to adopted regulation. So this is kind of a middle ground that we are doing. So the Conservancy staff is recommending that the board adopt regulations today. We will then submit those regulations to the Office of Administrative Law next Monday. The Office of Administrative Law has 10 calendar days to review, and they will review for 6 standards: authority, reference, consistency, necessity, clarity, and non-duplication. OAL might request changes as an alternative to rejection. And we are also seeking board delegation to the executive officer to make non-substantive changes to address OAL. Go ahead, Amy. She's going to correct all my mistakes.
Just to add to that, the resolution would authorize the executive officer to make any changes to the regulations, whether substantive or non-substantive. Those changes would be just to achieve the 6 standards that OAL applies to the regulations.
Great. Thank you for correcting me. And I want to point out that the early action wildfire funds that Evan talked about, those Prop 4 funds that were appropriated in April, they had an exemption from rulemaking. So later on the agenda today, you will see wildfire Prop 4 funds, but we cannot bring any other Prop 4 grants until we have the regulations in place. So the scope of the regulations, and this is attached to the agenda, it includes our grant application process, our grant authorization process, our eligibility criteria, and our selection criteria. And the eligibility and selection criteria should look very familiar to all of you, because we've had them for a while and they are included in the staff recommendations for projects. So the grant application process that we use and that we describe in the regulations that starts with a pre-application. So the applicant demonstrating that a project is eligible. This is not a required step, but grant applicants can use the pre-application to save time, get in a short application, and just determine basic eligibility. Then there is an application where the grant applicant must demonstrate how the project meets the project selection criteria. We also describe technical assistance, so the conservancy staff are available throughout this process to provide assistance to grant applicants. So it is not a black box process. We can have ongoing back and forth discussions with project partners and grant applicants. The next part of the process is the grant authorization process, which should also look very familiar to you. There is a staff recommendation that conservancy staff prepare. It describes all sorts of things about the project, and we present those to the board for consideration. We schedule them for an upcoming conservancy meeting, and then the board considers authorization of these grants. And then a summary of the eligibility and then the project selection criteria. So eligibility criteria, any grant application has to meet these criteria. They need to be consistent with the 2024 climate bond. They need to be consistent with our agency's enabling legislation. They need to be an eligible grantee under the climate bond and under our enabling legislation. They need to be CEQA ready. They need to demonstrate site ownership and control, and they need to have a plan for long-term management of the project. So those are the kind of yes-no criteria. And then our project selection criteria, the Conservancy adopted these in 2021. So we've been using them since then, and we've had prior selection criteria before that. They are six broadly stated criteria. They're attached, they're in the regulations. And except for the first criteria, which is consistency with the strategic plan, each criteria has a list of many factors that could demonstrate how the project meets that criteria. I like criterion. Is that the singular of criteria? Great. Okay. Criterion. And these are, I always get quantitative and qualitative mixed up. They're qualitative. They're qualitative. We are not scoring applications. So the project selection criteria are consistency with the strategic plan, a good investment of public funds, a serious effort to engage tribes, sustainable benefits, multiple benefits and significant positive impacts, and projects that are planned with meaningful community engagement. And these are all further described in the criteria. Okay, so with that, we are recommending that the Conservancy delegate authority to the executive officer to make changes to the regulations as needed to meet OAL standards of authority, reference, consistency, clarity, necessity, and non-duplication. And we're recommending that the Conservancy adopt the proposed emergency regulations so that we can submit them to OAL on Monday and hopefully start bringing Prop 4 grants to the board in February of 2026. And Amy, I want to thank her for writing these emergency regulations in conjunction with several of us here in coordination with Resources Agency. It's been quite a bit of work, so thank you. And we can take any questions, and then this is an action item. And then after this, we have one more executive officer report item, which is the exact opposite of the emergency regulations.
So am I correct that even though these are emergency regulations, they address something that we wouldn't really consider an emergency, which is all of our projects?
Or yeah, it's not an emergency in the sense of like a natural disaster. We have just been given the authority to use the emergency regulation process to adopt these regulations or go through the rulemaking, the APA rulemaking process.
Because Prop 4 didn't have the ordinary process embedded in it.
Prop 4 did not have what is called an APA exemption. The legislature did have legislation allowing us to use the emergency regulation process.
And then can you point to any major ways that this changes our operation? It sounds to me like we pretty much have in place already the way we typically address projects and our procedures.
Yeah, what we have tried to do with these regulations is to document how we go about doing our grant-making work now. So our intent is not to change our practices, but we need to have them memorialized in regulations or rules.
Because we've put a lot of time and effort into our procedures over the years. I mean,
49 years.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time on that.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Any other comments?
Just a comment. I know, I've heard a lot of noise from across many of the boards that are dealing with Prop 4, and this is, definitely, as Amy indicated, is a change of practice from previously passed propositions, and I know this is an additional layer of steps, so I just want to thank the staff. In fact, I don't tell my other boards, even though I'm on the record, this is the first reg package that I've seen come forward, so job well done. And I know agency really reached out to try to provide some guidelines so that across all of the boards and commissions who are being authorized Prop 4 funding, that they can do regs in consistency and moving forward, hopefully with a little less, individual working, having to do everything or duplicate processes. So I appreciate agency trying to step in also and provide some guidance there. But again, appreciate the staff because this was a very quick turnaround. And I should know this answer, but I don't, and I'm looking at agency, but I'm also looking at the both of you. So we're passing emergency regs. Will we be bringing forward a full a standard reg package following, or did I can't remember the legislation required, so that's why I'm asking, I guess.
The legislation, Prop 4, does not require that we follow up the emergency regulations
with standard regs.
With standard
okay, I couldn't remember if this was just kind of we're going to do the emergency regs so we can move things quickly, but then we still needed to do step 2, which, you know, is normal standard practice.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you. That's all.
And Joy has her hand.
Joy?
Thank you so much. I just want to say how much I appreciate the effort to expedite our use of the Prop 4 monies. And I think that to me is really what the bottom line is here. And I think it's just terrific that staff has turned this around so quickly so that we'll be able to be back in business in February.
Yeah.
That is our hope. And now, After board adoption and we submit to Office of Administrative Law, then there will be back and forth discussion with Office of Administrative Law. But we're hopeful that we get through that expeditiously as well.
All right. Are there any other comments or questions? Okay. Who would like to move that we approve this item on the executive director's report? Mr. Hallisey moves, Ms. Sterling seconds.
Okay.
Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes.
Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there any public comment on this?
There is no public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Thank you. All
Paul, go ahead.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 4C is approved.
Well, again, as others have said, thank you, Amy, for all of your writing skill, and Amy Hutzel for your work, and all the other staff people who helped with this. I'm glad that we're sending over this document on Thanksgiving week. Hopefully everyone will focus more on turkey than this, and they have 10 days to approve it, I guess, so good. It's a good time to send it over there.
We could have a Thanksgiving feast with Office of Administrative Law on Thursday and go through what we've sent over.
Right. Well, $900 million, more or less, is well worth giving thanks for.
Yes, exactly. We're very happy about Prop 4, and we will get through this, these little road bumps. And finally, on the executive officer report, Erica Johnson, a project specialist at the Conservancy, is going to present on our Coastal Stories program and show a couple of the PBS SoCal videos that were created to document the Coastal Stories grants. And the idea for this really came from our board find ways to really memorialize some of these Coastal Stories grants. So I'm going to turn it over to Erica.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. I'll just give a little bit of background information before we show the videos. So on February 15th, 2024, the board authorized the Coastal Stories Grant Amplification Project, awarding $100,000 to the Public Broadcasting Service of Southern California, or PBS SoCal, to produce a 6-part video series and an interactive web page sharing the projects of the Coastal Stories Grant Program. So the grant program ran from 2022 to 2024, supporting the development of 24 stories across our coast via grants or augments to existing projects. The goal is to make the coast more welcoming by documenting and sharing the histories of communities historically excluded from the narratives, media, and physical signage that we often see about California's public lands. The Coastal California video series and webpage amplify these stories beyond their physical locations, highlighting the people, cultures, and histories that have helped shape our coast. The webpage includes a map with the locations, descriptions, and preliminary content of 14 projects funded in the 2022 and 2023 grant rounds. On behalf of the Coastal Stories team, we encourage you to visit that webpage and view the 14 projects on the map, all of which have videos, media, or design renderings that they have created or collected for their projects. The 6-part video series takes us to the Tolowap Dini, or Tolowap people, in the city of Crescent City, surf communities of color in Venison Watts, and the blended communities of San Rafael, Watsonville, Guadalupe, and the city of Maywood. Please note that this was a collaborative effort that involved multiple Conservancy project managers, the project teams and communities that were involved, and PBS to come together and pull this off. PBS captured most of these projects while they were still in process, developing their storytelling content and installations with communities. So today we will view 2 of the 6 videos. The first is Sleepy Lagoon in the city of Maywood, which finished their project in 2024. And the second will be Watsonville Nature Center's Mural of Migrations, which has completed their mural design and are in process creating the mosaic with community.
I knew about Sleepy Lagoon. I knew about the Zoot Suit Riots. I didn't know that they happened in my neighborhood. And so we wanted to memorialize a place that has significant history in 2019, we started a process to honor the Sleepy Lagoon, the Zoot Suit culture, and the culture that continues today.
I'm Arturo Gonzalez. I'm a project manager and lead muralist for the Agua Por Vida Sleepy Lagoon Murals Project. I'm also co-director and co-founder of East Side of the River. It's a nonprofit community-based organization. We're a collective of artists dedicated to empowering our community, teaching indigenous ceremony, and beautifying our neighborhoods through art and murals. You know, we paint with everybody, from the policymakers to community organizations to homeboys in the street who feel like nobody cares about them. You know, we want to show them, hey, this is your wall, this is your neighborhood, and be a part of this. With community engagement, there's always a few things they always want, especially like in Latino neighborhoods. Virgen de Guadalupe, and they always want monarch butterflies. So we're in East LA right now. I think we're literally on the border of East LA and Montebello. This is where I grew up. I went to the high school around here. And art and murals, as well as community activism, kind of pulled me away from getting in trouble. I was getting locked up a lot and running amok and really not doing anything good for myself or good for my community. And I carry that with me today. A lot of our murals are primarily in working class communities like East LA, very similar, a lot of gang issues. So we check in and figure out who's who around there and try to work with them to pull them into more positive behavior, which is important. We come in with respect and it's reciprocated. The mural is a homage to Sleepy Lagoon, to this reservoir, but it's all around water. My abuela, my grandma, used to talk to me about Sleepy Lagoon. And she would tell me that there was this place that all the kids used to go to back in the day, like a lot of Pachuco kids. It was also like during segregation era, these kids weren't allowed to swim in public plunges. They weren't allowed to go to a lot of public beaches, or they couldn't make it to those beaches. They weren't allowed in a lot of public spaces. But kids today don't really know about it. People in the community, people in that community didn't know about that.
So this is a narrative of what Sleepy Lagoon was. It was paved over when they built the freeway. It's an industrial area near Eastern and Slauson, but this is the closest residential community to where the Sleepy Lagoon was located.
And this is in the early 40s. So some stuff went down at Sleepy Lagoon. This guy who was from 38th Street, Henry Levas, was jumped by a group of teens. He went back to his neighborhood, brought all his homeboys back. They were looking around, like figuring out where these people went, and they saw a party going on. They went to the party and broke it up, started a fight. During the fight, someone got stabbed and killed. What happened was the police response was like over dramatic. They basically went all around the east side and southeast LA, south central. They incarcerated hundreds of kids. They tried like a couple dozen kids for one murder. And the trial was like extremely racist. It was so racist that the California State Supreme Court overturned the ruling years later. The problem was, all these kids, they sent them to jail to mingle with real hardened criminals. So they went to criminal school. So there was a seed that was planted. And what occurred was like, you know, it just grew and it grew and it grew to the point we're at today.
One day he reached out and said, hey, there's this grant by the State Coastal Conservancy. If y'all can apply, we can work together on this, right? And I said, yeah, I love that idea. Through the Sleepy Lagoon report, we already had themes, right? The theme of water in the LA River, talking about indigenous cultures and how they're still present and not just a part of history. We are on Tongva lands, as well as remembering, right, the Zoot Suit culture of resistance that continues today.
We wanted to celebrate the specific communities, not just tell a story, but also recognize who's there now and why they're important and let them know they're important. And there's a whole aspect of it that's about our indigenous culture. Tongva Kish culture, the first peoples in this area, but also the tribes from Mexico where most of the community of Maywood, Southeast LA, all of the artists were from.
It wasn't even on my radar, really, to do a mural project until that funding came out that allowed Arturo to have like a little seed that had been planted. community members ended up choosing Leawood Riverfront Park, and that was the most viable of the sites as well. I worked with Eddie de la Riva, who has been mayor, vice mayor, and council member. We rotate in and out in the Southeast cities politically.
So the city of Maywood is a very small city, 1.2 square miles, making us one of the smallest cities in the county. There's a pride in our community. You know, you tend to know a lot of the same people. A lot of the friends that I went to school with still live in Maywood. And so there's that sense of community, small town that we're very proud of here in Maywood. For me, you know, this was a no-brainer. This was something that not only myself, but as a council, that we had to support. Being able to take a very tumultuous point in our nation's history and tell it from our point of view was very important for me.
Another artist, my homeboy from back in the day, Thunder, I hit him up like, hey, fool, I'm gonna need help with this. We might be getting this fair going for it. And then he plugged me in with all the people that are our organization out east side of the river.
I was very, very excited once it was 100% sure that we had it, because I've never done a mural on this scale. It's very important that the youth get to see this, because not only do they see this, but we involve them.
A big chunk of that grant was about paying kids from Maywood, from Southeast and East LA, to get paid to paint with us. We would mentor them. They would get paid pretty decently to work with us. And they'd also be learning about the mural.
Every talent is needed in this movement work, is needed for our communities. And so for folks to be able to find their lane, for youth to be able to explore what that lane is, for us to be able to create the opportunity for that has really been beautiful.
So like there are all these little chunks of the wall, little aspects in the mural that are like a love letter to that community, to our community. So to Maywood, to the people that live in that neighborhood, but to the east side, to the Chicano community, to the Latino community, to the indigenous community, to the undocumented community, all these people who feel like their voices aren't being heard. We want to show people that somebody cares, that things that you want to see, that our story about these events they may not know about are on this wall, and they're going to be there, and you know, for generations, and other people are going to see them. So like our hope for this mural and the work that we do for East Side of the River as an organization, they can use the energy and the education they learned about what went down in their neighborhood to empower them to improve their community.
And so to see a mural from the start of the process to the finish process was really, really beautiful and powerful. And from community members here, that it's the reflection of the three engagement that we did with them has been just so powerful to see the ownership. We wanted folks to walk away knowing that we get wins too, and we can have beautiful things too. Yeah.
We have one more video, but do we
Marcy
want to take...
Marcy Gutierrez, do you have something to say? Feel free to unmute.
Oh. I can wait until the other video is done.
I always keep a piece of paper in my pocket and I jot down my ideas. I was just really into art. It's just something I had a passion for as a child. Art makes people happy. It's an escape. So I wanted to create something that's super colorful and grabs everybody's attention. My name is Priscilla Martinez and I'm the lead artist in this project.
Watsonville is heaven. The town is only 5 miles in from the ocean, so we get these afternoon breezes.
Watsonville is an agriculturally based community on the central coast of California. We're located in the southern part of Santa Cruz County.
Community, agriculture, nature, the wetlands. I've lived here my whole life.
We have a diverse population, including Native peoples who've been here since time immemorial, as well as many waves of immigrants, especially folks who came here to work in agriculture.
The Ohlone Amamutsin are the local tribal band who have been on the land for centuries before any Europeans or Mexicans got here. California was Mexico before it was California, so Mexicans and the natives were here living together. They are all still here.
Watsonville Wetlands Watch is a local nonprofit organization. We restore wetlands, plant trees, and develop young environmental leaders in our community of the Pajaro Valley.
Watsonville has an incredible pathway and system of wetlands that are federally protected.
This is one of the few remaining coastal freshwater wetlands in California. We partnered with Community Arts and Empowerment to do broad outreach to the artist community in our region.
Brooke and I collaborated so that we could be the fabricators of the mosaics, whatever design was chosen. Community Arts and Empowerment is a nonprofit organization. We were established in 2019. Our mission is to create public art for, by, and with the community that both represents and empowers them. The empowerment part is that we're teaching youth job skills, not just for the arts industry, but tiling can get you a union job. Empowerment for us is how we represent the community, and we want the community to see themselves in the public art that we create.
This project has two components. We have a 30 by 10 foot wall mosaic mural that will welcome community members and other visitors to the new Nature Center, as well as a series of 9 mosaic medallions.
We had 27 artists submit works that they had already done. And then a committee got together, looked at those 27 submissions, chose 3 artists. All 3 submissions were great. It was a super hard choice, but we let the community vote. It was like Priscilla, hands down.
I was like shocked. But I was like, okay, I can do this.
People know who Priscilla is. They love her. She's such a wonderful, warm person.
We were delighted to work with Priscilla. She's a Watsonville born and raised artist.
Before I created the design, there was already community input on what people wanted to see in this mural. It's for the community to feel proud, you know, of what they see, you know, here in town.
Some of the designs that were submitted were so soft between colors that they won't read from a distance. Priscilla's is going to shine.
There's so many colors, yeah. The community wanted to see the past, present, and the future represented in this room. There's so much input. Going back to the history, the way they hunted, gathered crops, and the certain tools that they used. The basket weaving had to be the specific design. I had to do my research. It's history.
It's showcasing the plant and animal diversity of this valley, as well as all of the different peoples who have lived here in the past and the present.
The Ohlone and Amamutsin, they're the smallest minority in our community right now, but this was their land first. For the rest of us to acknowledge and see them, it's invaluable. That representation is a form of empowerment.
They have always been here in this community, and they continue to do important work to restore and conserve the environment.
This is such a community-focused project. I really hope they appreciate all the work that everybody participated in creating this mural.
It's an invitation for people of all ages to be a part of local environmental conservation.
This is a chance for Priscilla's work to live on. For the kids who are working on it right now, they get to show their grandparents, I did this. 50 years from now, they get to show their grandkids, I did this. And so everybody who puts their hand on it, it's theirs. They get to own it. Representation. ownership, pride of community. Those are just the best.
For me, I'm so proud. Yeah, I'm so proud.
Yeah, I want to really thank Coastal Conservancy staff who developed this Coastal Stories program and then worked so hard with PBS on the videos. Yeah, it just it makes me very happy. And I think Board Member Gutierrez Groudinch wants to speak.
If I may, I could not have a bigger smile because I think it doesn't fit in my face. But first of all, congratulations, felicidades to everybody. This is so moving, both to see the Sleepy Lagoon mural, which actually I don't think a lot of people know about this issue that happened in LA. It's really interesting because it speaks to that lack of access to the coast that people at that time had, and how important it is to remember this and to learn from it, at least here in California. So it's very, very exciting to see that. I didn't learn about this issue until I was in college, took a Mexican-American history class. So it's something that's very exciting to see that. And again, to see that growth and to learn from those issues, especially with that coastal access link. And the other one, the Watsonville, that's so exciting, especially with the hands-on training. But congratulations, felicidades, enhorabuena. This is exciting. And I could not be prouder of this. I wonder if like we could have like a tour of all the Coastal Stories sites for the 50th anniversary. I don't know. I can drive. Happy to drive. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of approval of that idea from behind me. So we'll work to make it happen. Yeah. There are four other videos, so I encourage you to watch those four. I've watched them repeatedly, and they're fantastic.
And where could we get those videos?
They're on the PBS SoCal website. It's funny, when I go, it then sends me to KQED. But then they're also on YouTube. So
I can share the link. It's PBSSoCal/shows/Coastal California. But we can share the link out.
I'm going to suggest that at our next two meetings, we have two each of these.
Oh.
So why don't we?
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay.
I mean, they're beautiful and they really incorporate what we're all about, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Great.
So why don't we take some time each meeting and see two at each meeting? You know, I don't know if any of you have been around long enough to remember back when we did the Coastal Conservancy insignia. I don't know what it's called, actually.
The logo.
But logo. And as I recall, we hired a company to come up with five or six examples for us to choose one. And I remember distinctly our chairman at the time said he didn't like any of them. And I think all of us felt that way. And then we chose one which we're using today, which is fine. You know, I'm not sure it's all that inspired, but I got to thinking, watching these, you know, these people could easily have come up with one for us because these are very talented people that capture, you know, their community. I think given some time, we ought to be looking at maybe another one for us.
Not a logo process.
But I don't know how long ago that was, probably 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, it was before me, so over 25 years ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, and Board Member Harmon has her hand up.
Yes, thank you so much. I just wanted to say I had some internet challenges, so I was trying to get back on. And anyway, long story short, I got back on for the tail end of that video. And I just couldn't agree more about how absolutely fantastic it is. And I have, I think those on Zoom could see my son was here for part of that. I have three kids and I cannot wait to watch these videos with them. I mean, what an opportunity for us as a family. And I totally support the idea of watching two at the next couple meetings. So I just had to chime in and say, through my technological issues, I did manage to catch part of it. And I just love it and my gratitude. Thank you.
Good.
Great. Thanks,
Erica, this isn't your first time, is it?
No. This is, I think I've been at the Conservancy since 2020.
That's okay, good to, all right. Well, you did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and that concludes the executive officer report.
All right, good. Well, now we'll move on to our project part of the agenda, and Trish Chapman will do the first item, which is the on the Central Coast, item number 5.
Okay. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and Conservancy Board members. Staff requests the authorization to disperse up to $3,050,000 to Sempervirens funds to undertake the Big Basin Redwood Wildfire Resilience Project. This project is an opportunity to help California's oldest state park recover from the devastating fires in 2020, increase its wildfire resilience for the future, and enhance 215 acres of old-growth coast redwood habitat. The authorization also includes adopting findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. Big Basin Redwood State Park is located in Santa Cruz County and was established in 1902, making it the oldest state park in California. The park is comprised of over 18,000 acres of diverse ecosystems, including the largest and southernmost continuous tract of old growth redwoods. The orange areas on this map show sensitive habitats located in the project area, including old growth redwood stands with complex canopy structures and historic and potential nesting habitat for the federally threatened and California endangered marbled murrelet. Next slide. In August 2020, the CZU Lightning Complex fire burned 135 square miles in the Santa Cruz Mountains, consuming approximately 97% of Big Basin Redwood State Park. The old-growth redwood forest area of the park had severe burn damage. Since the fire, substantial dead and downed woody fuels have accumulated, as has dense, early, and rapidly growing successional vegetation. These conditions threaten the integrity of the park's old-growth redwood stands and sensitive habitat. And without intervention, the existing heavy fuel loads and altered forest structure will continue to increase the probability of another high-intensity wildfire, jeopardizing ecological recovery of the park's sensitive habitat and protection of nearby communities, park infrastructure, and adjacent forest land. Following the fire, state parks prepared a comprehensive strategy for Big Basin and also engaged the community in a post-fire visioning process called Reimagining Big Basin. The proposed project is an important priority for both of those planning efforts. The project consists of vegetation fuel reduction and habitat enhancement on 215 acres in the old growth redwood area of the park. This work will be done using a variety of methods. Excess vegetation on approximately 185 acres will be mechanically masticated and chipped, and large dead trees will be grouped into burn piles. That area is shown in pink. Due to steep slopes prohibiting the use of heavy equipment, an additional 30 acres will be manually treated, and these areas are shown in blue on the map. When all this work is done, the state park's natural resource field crews and burn bosses will burn the piles. Treatments will occur along major road corridors and in the most heavily visited areas of the park. Reducing fuels in these areas can reduce human-caused ignitions in the future. And also, reduction of fuels along Highway 236 and Lodge Road is critical to ensure their continued use as safe evacuation routes. In addition to the proposed activities, Sempervirens funds and state parks are undertaking complementary work in two other areas. In the 14 acres shown in orange on the map, volunteer teams are collecting small and dead and downed vegetation into burn piles. And in the yellow area of the map, state parks will manually remove dead and downed vegetation and construct burn piles on 15 to 18 acres, and then demonstrate to contractors how the work should be conducted on the 215 acres that this project will fund. And that demonstration project is expected to help with bidding on the project. Okay. This image is from Sempervirens Fund volunteer activities that are already underway. The project recommended for funding today will also include community engagement activities for the public to learn about proactive forest restoration and wildfire resilience. Activities may include social media posts, community meetings, and volunteer opportunities like the one shown here. State Park intends to reintroduce prescribed fire to the park on an ongoing basis, and this project is a first step to facilitate safe reintroduction of prescribed fire by reducing fuel loads specifically around old growth redwoods and roads, trails, and other high visitor use areas. Lastly, the lessons from this project could be applied across the Santa Cruz Mountains and potentially to other areas of coast redwoods. So thank you for your consideration of this project. Sempervirens Fund, David Kalman is here and would like to say a few words. And then we also have Hudson Northrup of State Parks online who would also like to say a few words. You can have questions.
How do I sound?
I'm assuming great. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and members of the board. My name is David Kalman, and I'm the Director of Stewardship for Sempervirens Fund, and I'm also a California Registered Professional Forester. Yes, I can. I can also get closer. How's that? Perfect. Sempervirens Fund is a nonprofit land trust in the Santa Cruz Mountains dedicated to protecting and preserving redwood forests, specifically in the Santa Cruz Mountains. We're the oldest land trust in the state and were created in 1900 by a group of individuals who pooled resources to protect what is now Big Basin Redwood State Park. That said, Big Basin is unique for many reasons beyond just being the impetus for our organization. It's also the largest continuous tract of old growth redwoods south of San Francisco, near the southern extent of the Coast Redwood Range globally and in the state, and it's near the southern end of the Marble Murrelet Range, an endangered seabird that nests exclusively in old growth and older second growth forests. And unfortunately, it's one of the few, if only recent, examples of high-intensity wildfire impacting old-growth redwoods on a landscape scale. The Santa Cruz Mountains sit on the front line of redwood conservation in a changing climate, and we are watching firsthand how redwoods are being impacted by and recovering from high-intensity wildfire at a significant scale. This project will build upon significant planning efforts conducted by State Parks and Save the Redwoods League immediately following the fire, and will be the first step in reintroducing beneficial prescribed fire as a means of enhancing and restoring the park and preparing those redwood stands for an uncertain future. The lessons that we have learned and will continue to learn at Big Basin will inevitably have impacts on the whole of the redwood region. Big Basin is near and dear to my heart specifically. It's near and dear to our organization's heart. It's near and dear to the Santa Cruz Mountains, and it's near and dear to the state of California. And this project is crucial to preparing the park and the old growth redwood stands within the park for a changing climate. Thank you for your consideration of this project. It goes without saying, but we are all very excited about it. And I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Aren't redwoods more resilient to fire than most species?
Yes. Yeah, redwoods are remarkably resilient to fire. Yeah, I'll come back. They're very resilient to fire. They have a lot of adaptations to fire. I can go over those adaptations. This is where I will geek out. I will not go over those adaptations. but yes, they are very resilient to fire.
But it was a bad fire. Yeah. Is Hudson Northrop, can we bring him on? It's okay.
Hi there. Can folks hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Hudson Northrup. I'm an environmental scientist with the Santa Cruz District of California State Parks. Thank you to everyone for taking your time to listen to us today. Talking about this project, as David and Trish said, I just want to reiterate the value of these old growth redwood forests in Big Basin Redwood State Park. As mentioned, it's the largest redwood stand south of the Golden Gate Bridge. And they have immense, you know, ecological value in terms of biodiversity, habitat preservation, and just are near and dear to the hearts of many folks in California. It is the oldest California state park. As David mentioned, you know, following the CZU fire, we're facing very novel and complex conditions, addressing a high severity fire to this extent in the coastal redwood ecosystem. And there are just, you know, extreme conditions of many dead trees and fuel loads following the fire. And while redwoods are very resilient to fire, this large pulse of fuel loads and novel conditions, especially going into a changing climate, you know, puts them at risk to, you know, loss due to repeated fires. So this project is a very important step toward protecting and restoring this ecosystem, particularly in the heart of the old growth redwood, and making it more resilient to climate change and wildfire moving forward. State Parks have been using prescribed fire and stewarding Big Basin for over 30 years before the fire, and this would be a key step towards reintroducing fire after the wildfire of 2020 moving forward. We have a long history partnering with Semper Irons Fund to implement these stewardship projects and to take care of the park. So we're really looking forward to restoring and improving the old growth of the park. Thank you all for your time. And like David, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Oh, Kara. Yes, Kara, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Kara Woodruff. I'm here on behalf of Senator John Laird. This project is within Santa Cruz County and also within the Senate District 17, which he represents. And you'll see a letter of support for this great project on file. Anybody who's seen post-fire of Big Basin, it was a devastating history that we've had, but this is a really important step led by a great team at Semper Vivens Fund to bring back Big Basin to its former glory and even improving it into the future. So just want to urge on behalf of Senator Laird your support for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. Any other comments? Are there any public comments?
There are no public comments.
All right. Who would like to move approval of this item? Joy, would you? Yes. Yeah.
I'll second.
And Marsh seconds. Okay, Paul, would you like to call the roll, please?
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alvis?
Hi.
Ms. Perrault?
Hi.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hollisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 5 is approved.
Well, thank you for your great work and good luck with this.
Thank you all.
And Trish, thank you too. All right, we'll now go on to item 6 that will be presented by Lexi Morrison. Lexi? The Watsonville Slough Mini Ranch. Awesome. Have you been out there riding horses?
No, I have not.
Awesome. Mini horses, okay.
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. Staff recommends authorizing up to $980,000 in U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant funds for the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County to acquire the 62-acre Watsonville Slough Mini Ranch. This acquisition will protect and restore wetlands, improve water quality, support sensitive species, and allow compatible agriculture, tribal access, and limited public access. This property will be added to the 490-acre Watsonville Slough Farms, which the Conservancy helped the Land Trust acquire. The Watsonville Slough system has lost most of its historic wetlands to farming and development, leaving fragmented habitat and limited floodplain. Mini Ranch includes 40 acres of flood-prone farmland and 20 acres of wetlands already transitioning back to natural conditions. Without protection, the land could revert to intensive agriculture, worsening water quality and habitat loss. Acquiring it now expands conserved wetlands by 13% and sets the foundation for future restoration and climate adaptation. The Mini Ranch property is shown here in red. About 40 acres will be restored or allowed to naturally return to wetlands and floodplain. The remaining 22 acres will continue in organic climate-resilient farming that supports conservation goals. Benefits include added flood storage, groundwater recharge, carbon sequestration, and reduced runoff and erosion. This effort aligns with the broader Pajaro Valley work to link wetland restoration with sustainable agriculture on frequently flooded lands. This is one of the last unprotected wetland areas in the Middle Watsonville Slough, so conserving it fills a critical gap. The wetlands support species such as California red-legged frog and tidewater goby. Restoring the floodplain helps absorb stormwater and reduces flood risk for nearby farms and infrastructure. It's a good tactic. The project demonstrates how nature-based solutions benefit both ecosystems and local communities. The Amamutsin Tribal Band is a long-standing partner with the Land Trust and recognizes Mini Ranch as culturally significant. The project guarantees ongoing tribal access for cultural surveys, ceremonies, and restoration activities. The tribe will also tend culturally important plants, such as white root sedge, and helps shape stewardship plans using traditional ecological knowledge. This partnership strengthens both cultural and ecological resilience. Mini Ranch is adjacent to the 490-acre Watsonville Slough Farm, which will open for public access and education programs next year. While Mini Ranch's wetlands are too sensitive for trails, it will be incorporated into the farm's interpretive programs through views, signage, and community events. The surrounding area lacks park space, so this project expands local open space and educational opportunities. Public access will be managed thoughtfully to protect sensitive habitat. Thank you. Brendan Quirk from the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County is here in the room and has a few words to share, and then we are happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bosco, and members of the board. My name is Brendan Quirk. I'm the Land Protection Manager at the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County. I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak today and to express the Land Trust's sincere appreciation for everyone who contributed to the development of, and submission of this proposal. We want to extend a huge thank you to the State Coastal Conservancy for their partnership, which made it possible for us to apply for these funds for the National Coastal Wetlands Conservation Program through U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We'd like to recognize Trish Chapman and Hillary Hill and Lexi Morrison for their enthusiastic collaboration on this project over the last year and a half and their commitment to helping us complete the acquisition. With this funding and in continued partnership with the Conservancy, we'll be able to protect existing habitat and restore fallow agricultural land in the Watsonville Slough system, improve habitat for native species, including California red-legged frog and burrowing owl, and enhance water quality for both human and wildlife communities in the lower Pajaro Valley. We're excited to strengthen wildlife corridors in a fragmented landscape and enhance the world-class birding opportunities already present in this region. As a part of this project, the Land Trust will also provide meaningful access for local Indigenous groups for cultural resource surveys, ceremony, and stewardship events. I'm really grateful for the Coastal Stories video from the community of Watsonville. This project is about 1 mile from that community center where that mosaic will be placed, so you've got a taste for the beauty of the region and the wetlands. This project is also adjacent to Segment 8 of the Coastal Rail Trail that, once built, will establish a walking and biking trail to the city of Watsonville. We are so grateful for the continued investment in this landscape by the Coastal Conservancy. As mentioned, over the last 15 years, the Land Trust, with the Coastal Conservancy's support, will have protected almost 800 acres in the lower Pajaro and Watsonville Sloughs region. We are truly excited to see what we can achieve together through this project and others. Thank you for your time and for your thoughtful consideration of our application.
Thank you. Are there any comments? Kara, go ahead. Senator Laird's office.
This is a great day for Santa Cruz County. Once again, this is a project that Senator Laird supports. The Land Trust of Santa Cruz County just has a really great record of success. So it's really anything that they propose seems like a really good idea. And in this case, when you have a chance to protect coastal freshwater wetlands, that's a rare opportunity. So on behalf of Senator Laird, I wanted to urge your support and thank you, everyone.
As was mentioned, we have invested funds in the past with the Watsonville Slough, I believe. I recall at least a couple times. Yes. Fairly large projects, right?
Yes, so we helped out with the 490-acre Watsonville Slough Farm project, and I think that was about 15 years ago.
We helped with, I believe, 4 acquisitions. Some of those were also funded through the Fish and Wildlife Service program that this project is funded through, the National Coastal Wetlands Conservation Grant Program.
I noticed last week that the national administration is planning to cut back on and maybe even try to eliminate wetlands protection. So we're going to have to increase our efforts in that, you know, to counter that. It's a shame because it's an important part of the ecological system, these wetlands. And today, Watsonville, as you mentioned, has kind of taken center stage for us. Any other comments? Are there public comments? Joy, go ahead.
Joy, you're muted.
You're mute.
Chairman, I just wanted to echo what you just said, is that we need to step in where the federal government is. And so I really, really appreciate all of these proposals.
All right.
Just one note. For those who may be watching online, we're not considering dispersing $980 million as it states on the, but $980,000.
We did correct that. Okay. Yeah, I wish we could disperse $980 million.
Finance might have a little bit of an issue with it. We may have some comments if it was that amount.
Well, someone was saying that we should get rid of the Prop 4 money quickly, I guess. We won't have to have
it in 10
years. All right. Are there any other comments? All right. Who would like to move approval of this?
There's no public comments.
There's no public comments?
No.
So moved.
All right. Michelle.
I'll move.
Mr. Hallisey seconds. Paul, will you please call the roll? Yes.
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Gaudinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling? Ms. Sterling? Can you unmute?
Aye.
Thank you. Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 6 is approved.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, Lexi. We'll now move to item 7, the Arena Cove Coastal Trail Construction Project. And Louisa Morris will present that. Louisa.
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Coastal Conservancy Board. My name is Louisa Morris. I'm on the Conservancy's North Coast team. And today, for your consideration, I'm going to share information on the Arena Cove Coastal Trail Construction Project. Yeah. Staff are asking the board to consider and authorize disbursement of up to $565,000 to the Mendocino Land Trust to undertake the construction of a 0.3-mile long segment of the California Coastal Trail near Arena Cove in Point Arena in Mendocino County, as well as adopt CEQA findings for this project. This grant would follow a $115,000 planning grant from the Conservancy to the Mendocino Land Trust, which has been completed for the design, planning, and permitting for this coastal trail segment. Now it's going to go to the next slide, probably. Yep, there we go. I got a little enthusiastic, I guess. There we go. Here you can see Arena Cove and the Point Arena Cove Pier. The starting point for the new CCT segment is below the pines in the foreground on the left side of this photograph. Some project highlights, and I've got to love this Courier font. Project highlights include a little bit of a throwback. The unique and spectacular coastline that is typical of Point Arena. If you haven't been, you really must visit. It's remote, intimate, and a spectacular section of the Northern California coast. This 0.3-mile long trail, small but mighty, will provide a missing CCT connection between public lands at Arena Cove and the Bureau of Land Management to the north, connecting Arena Cove and Pier up to over 8 miles of California Coastal Trail to the north. And finally, this trail connection will be built within a public access easement on private property that was donated by a willing landowner, which is noteworthy. Zooming in on the project location, you can see Arena Cove to the left side of this photograph, Arena Pier. There's public parking, and there's a rectangular building that houses several restaurants. And then bracketed on the right-hand side of the photograph is the, in blue arrows, is the 0.3-mile long California Coastal Trail segment that will be constructed. Zooming in even closer, I'd like to highlight some of the project elements. They include two stairways, a viewing platform, fencing to delineate private and public areas, management and interpretive and warning signs. And this is the trail that will be constructed in the public access easement on private property. At the top of this aerial photograph is the Bureau of Land Management's California Coastal National Monument. So these photographs depict hikers enjoying the Bureau of Land Management's lands in the California Coastal Monument near Point Arena, a surfer at Arena Cove, and the Point Arena Lighthouse. So the trail will connect up the Arena Cove to BLM, to the lighthouse, and then you have to put on a bathing suit or jump in a boat to cross the Garcia River, which then connects up to 5 miles of existing California Coastal Trail at Manchester State Beach. I now welcome any questions or comments, and thank you very much.
Are there any questions or comments? Are there any public comments?
We have one public comment.
Okay. And who's that?
Kathleen, please unmute.
Okay, Kathleen, go ahead.
Thank you very much. So I am, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm on the board of the local nonprofit Point Arena Coastal Stewards. We led this project right from the start. It started with community meetings. Louisa did a great job of explaining it. the reason I am raising my hand and saying something is because I want to emphasize the owners of the Coast Guard Inn that are very, very generously donating a 15-foot wide public access easement on the western edge of their property. Without that, this would not be possible. 3 years ago, a bunch of us met and tried to figure out how to climb the hill, but we had Point Arena Mountain Beaver, we had wetlands, and we had shale that just crumbled under our feet. So the only opportunity was on this old historic Coast Guard Inn property, and the McCollum family had just bought it, and here we were asking if we could have a chunk of it. And after they understood the need, they generously donated it. So my job here is a loud shout out to the McCollum family, and a thank you very much to the Conservancy for considering this. Thank you.
Well, thank you for pointing that out. All right. Do I hear a motion that we approve this item?
I'll move it.
Mr. Hallisey moves and
second.
Ms. Perrault seconds that we approve item 7. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grodinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Yes. That was aye.
Okay. Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right. Item 7 is approved.
All right. Good. Thank you very much. All right. We'll go on now to item 8. Morgan Wright will present that. And I won't try to pronounce it, but you could, please.
Yes, I will. Thank you. Okay. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize disbursement of $800,750 to Sanctuary Forest, Inc. to acquire the Tachi No Niash property to protect, restore, and enhance native species, habitats, and waterways, protect cultural landscapes, features, and attributes, and provide opportunities for compatible California Native American tribal access and potential limited public access in Whitethorn, Humboldt County. The project also includes the removal of cannabis infrastructure, transferring the property to the Intertribal Sinkyone Wilderness Council, or the Council, and initial stewardship planning for the property. The 255-acre property is located in the heart of the Mattole River watershed, shown on the map. The region is steep, heavily forested, and highly erosive. The area was heavily impacted by extensive timber harvests between 1945 and 1970. Since that time, the area has been further impacted by the expansive growth of the cannabis industry. Like the boom and bust of the logging, mining, and commercial fishing industries in the West, the cannabis industry overreached, impacting the land, vegetation, rivers, and streams, and then collapsed. Excuse my voice, I'm getting over a cold. The property is near other protected lands in the area, including around 4,000 acres of land also tended and cared for by the council and funded in part by the Conservancy and the Trust for Public Lands in 1997. The property is also adjacent to Sinkyone Wilderness State Park and the King Range National Conservation Area, part of which is shown in dark green on the map on the screen. Together, these lands link thousands of acres of concerned lands in the North Coast region, significantly contributing to the ecological integrity of the area. The property includes approximately 1 mile of the mainstream Mattole River, or Tache, in the Sinkyone language, and 1,500 feet of Bear Cub Creek, or No Niash, in the Sinkyone language. These waterways provide critical habitat for fish, wildlife, including threatened species, and support a rich diversity of native plants and animals. The property was previously used as a cannabis grow operation and features two derelict and rotting structures, various sheds, fences, water tanks, and trash, which will be moved as part of the project. Sanctuary Forest will acquire, clean up the property, and transfer it to the Intertribal Sinkyone Wilderness Council, a nonprofit tribal organization consisting of 10 member tribes.
After acquiring the property, the council intends to designate the land as a tribal protected area, ensuring lasting ecological protection and supporting the council's reestablishment of cultural stewardship. The council will conduct initial stewardship planning for the property, which may include a draft concept plan for limited public access, restoration needs, stewardship opportunities, and an initial framework for culturally informed conservation practices. The project will protect, revitalize, and enhance critical habitats for native species within the Tache watershed, including threatened and endangered species like coho salmon, steelhead, and Pacific lamprey. The project will protect an important wildlife corridor adjacent to the 68,000-acre King Range and other public and conserved lands. The project will reintroduce tribal stewardship onto the land to sustain the health, land, water, air, and tribal communities. Other funding includes $100,000 from the California Council of Land Trusts and $65,000 from the Decolonizing Wealth Project. Letters of support for the project from Assemblymember Chris Rogers, Senator Mike McGuire, and Congressman Huffman are attached to the staff recommendation in Exhibit 3. Thank you. I'd now like to introduce Hawk Rosales, representing the council, to say a few words, and April Newlander, Sanctuary Forest Executive Director, is also on the call to say a few words and assist with questions. I think Hawk is the 707 phone number.
Hawk, I've allowed you to unmute. Please feel free to talk.
Hello, this is Hawk. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. My name is Hawk Rosales, and I've been requested to read this statement by the Intertribal Tsingkiyun Wilderness Council. I am a consultant to the Tsingkiyun Council, and the Tsingkiyun Council is a tribal nonprofit consortium comprised of 10 sovereign, federally recognized Northern California tribes with deep and enduring cultural connections to the lands and waters of traditional Tsingkiyun and neighboring tribal territories. In the mid-1980s, the Council and Trust for Public Land partnered with the Coastal Conservancy to secure 3,844 acres along the so-called Lost Coast. 10 years later, in 1997, that land was transferred to the Council for establishment of the first ever intertribal protected area in the U.S. This was one of the earliest tribal land return initiatives. The council is very pleased for this opportunity to partner with Sanctuary Forest and the Coastal Conservancy to secure and protect Tache Nonyash land, which holds great cultural significance for the council and its member tribes. The return of this land is extremely important to the Tsingkiyun Council and to the land, waterways, and plant and animal relatives who live there. This project embodies key principles and aspirations of the effort supporting the rematriation and healing of tribal homelands forcibly taken from ancestors who lived upon and loved these lands since the dawn of time. Following its acquisition by Sanctuary Forest, the land will be transferred to the Tsingkiyun Council for active stewardship and designation as a tribal protected area in order to ensure lasting, culturally informed protection. Tribal protected area designation memorializes inherited cultural responsibilities to maintain and revitalize traditional tribal relationships with the land, air, water, spirits, and native flora and fauna of this land. This project will protect and revitalize nature and tribal cultural values and lifeways, ensure lasting protection for land and water, reestablish systems of traditional land care, protect and restore the land and its waterways, habitats, and species, help address climate, wildlife, and conservation crises, reestablish tribal cultural relationships to benefit land, water, and air, revitalize habitats supporting traditional native foods, food sovereignty, and abundance, reinstate intergenerational care, guardianship, and healing of this cultural landscape, and provide opportunity for a seasonal public hike program led by council representatives. Thank you for your consideration of this request. The Council looks forward to collaborating with Sanctuary Forest and the Coastal Conservancy on the next steps of this important endeavor.
Thank you, Hawk. April, would you like to say a couple words?
Yeah, thank you. I'm April Newlander, and I'm the Executive Director for Sanctuary Forest, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today and for your consideration of this project. For nearly 40 years, the State Coastal Conservancy has been a vital partner to Sanctuary Forest in advancing conservation and restoration throughout the Mattole River watershed. We deeply value this longstanding relationship. In addition, we have a longstanding relationship with the Intertribal Sinkyone Wilderness Council. As Hawk just mentioned, the conservation easement, and in 1997, Sanctuary Forest became the holder of a conservation easement over that land. So we have been longstanding partners. We are especially excited about this project because it goes beyond land protection. It supports the restoration of indigenous connection to place. This remote property includes about a mile of the main stem Mattole River, which is stated as home to three threatened salmonid species and many other wildlife species. The tributaries provide cold, clean, year-round water that is essential to their survival, and it is deemed a high-priority conservation property. As Morgan also mentioned, it is connected to the 68,000-acre King Range National Conservation Area, which also connects further to a matrix of over 150,000 acres of conserved land that the Coastal Conservancy and partners have helped to protect. We sincerely appreciate the Coastal Conservancy's partnership with Sanctuary Forest and the Intertribal Sinkyone Wilderness Council in considering this important project. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Are there any comments?
No public comment.
Okay. This means a lot to me. In the 80s, I was involved in the movement to set aside the Sinkyone Wilderness, which of all the magnificent places on the North Coast, I believe the Sinkyone Wilderness probably is the number one, if I had to choose a number one. And I'm really glad to see the various tribes taking over stewardship of these lands, because they'll certainly do a better job of it than some of the ones that have in the past. So if I could move this, which I can't as chair, but I would, and I will ask for someone to move approval. Joy, Sterling, and Mr. Hallisey will second that we approve item 8. Paul, will you call the roll, please?
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 8 is approved.
And thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going on to item 9 now, which is in San Diego County. And that will be presented by Lily Allen. Lily?
Good morning, Chair Bosco and Conservancy Board. Staff requests authorization to disperse up to $6,353,000 to two tribes, one university, and one local fire safe council to carry out implementation projects that will improve forest health and wildfire resiliency in Monterey County, San Diego County, and Mendocino County. These projects are an opportunity to implement strategic wildfire resiliency efforts throughout the Conservancy's jurisdiction using California's 2024 climate bond funding. This authorization also includes adopting findings under the Environmental Quality Act. Three of these projects received a suspension from state statutes and regulations, including the California Environmental Quality Act that is set forth in the Governor's March 1st, 2025 proclamation of a state emergency. And I want to say a special thank you so much to staff at CNRA and CalEPA for helping us with these suspensions. I am delighted to bring these three emergency projects to you today. First up is the Esalen Tribe of Monterey County. They are a nonprofit organization and plan to build upon ongoing tribal wildfire resilience work at the recently acquired ancestral lands of the Esalen Tribe. The land has been severely impacted by decades of fire suppression, overgrazing, flooding, and invasive plants. While the land was burned by tribal members intentionally for centuries, Western fire suppression and the outlawing of cultural burning has led to dangerous wildfire conditions that now pose an existential threat to the people, plants, and animals that call this place home. In recent years, some of the largest, most destructive, and costly wildfires have occurred in this area, including the 2008 Basin Complex Fire, the 2016 Cervantes Fire, and the 2020 River Carmel and Dolan Fires. The project consists of planning and implementing a series of cultural fire trainings that include cultural burning operations, including pile burning, biochar creation, and broadcast burning. These trainings will foster intergenerational traditional ecological knowledge, TEK, and cultural fire knowledge sharing between tribal members and nonprofit staff. Some burn plots will be burned several times to interrupt the seed cycle of invasive plant species. Where appropriate, preeminent herbicide will also be applied to prevent regrowth of the non-native plants. The La Jolla Band of Luiseno Indians will implement a multifaceted approach centered on active land stewardship in northern San Diego County. The core activity is a strategic fuel treatment of 516 acres, but the project will use a combination of cultural burning, manual and mechanical methods to thin dense vegetation, remove dead and dying trees killed by the gold-spotted oak borer beetle, GSOB, and reduce hazardous trees and ladder fuels. GSOB is responsible for major oak mortality in Southern California, as you can see here from the dead trees in this photo. On the ground, the work will create a critical shaded fuel break along Highway 76. Most salvageable biomass generated will be removed and processed for beneficial reuse. Under the guidance of the tribe's cultural fire practitioners, cultural burns will be planned and implemented on 219 acres. The tribe will also develop and host one hands-on wildfire prevention workshop and five wildfire training classes for at least 50 tribal and community members, empowering them with the knowledge and skills for home hardening and fire preparedness. University of California, San Diego, in collaboration with the La Jolla Band of Luiseno Indians and other indigenous organizations, is leading a large-scale eucalyptus removal and habitat restoration project at the Elliott Chaparral Reserve. Large trees suitable for lumber will be preserved for uses like furniture, fencing, signage, and natural playgrounds. Remaining wood will be separated into branches and trunks. After air drying on site for 12 months, trunks will be processed in a carburetor to produce biochar, a carbon-rich material that stores carbon and improves soil health. This will be the first major biochar project in San Diego, and it aims to demonstrate how low-value eucalyptus can be repurposed into useful products. The biochar will be tested in 10 experimental plots at the site. UCSD project includes members of the San Diego Indigenous community in an active role restoring the land after tree removal, including selecting plant species for revegetation and using plant materials for cultural purposes. The Mendocino Fire Safe Council project includes additional 3 years of community chipping services and implementation of a volunteer workdays around vulnerable community structures, the development of a chipper day sustainability plan, and continuing broad community engagement over the 3-year period. The project will support and motivate residents in creating defensible space in their neighborhoods by providing free chipper days throughout the community chipper days. Defensible space is one of the crucial factors in protecting homes in a wildfire event. However, the work required is demanding and often expensive. Neighborhood-level hazards, such as overgrown access roads and fuels encroachment around key infrastructure, are often left unaddressed. Both community chipper days and community work parties help address this gap. Community work parties bring a trained crew to assist with fuel reduction and plant ID to motivate people to work with their neighbors to develop these habits as they become wildfire prepared. Volunteer involvement is an essential element of both programs, which encourage local leadership development in the organization of these events, nurtured by staff at the Mendocino Fire Safe Council.
Carbon sequestration is also improved by removing small competing vegetation to support health of mature trees. The Mendocino FireSafe Council has dedicated 30% of community work parties to be in collaboration with tribes, and an estimated 80% of the Mendocino FireSafe project will be conducted in disadvantaged communities. Mendocino County FireSafe Council's crews consist entirely of Mendocino County tribal members who had an initial job training in tribal programs and that Mendocino County FireSafe Council was able to work with to provide a bridge to full-time employment with living wages. Thank you. I and representatives from the projects are available for questions. Jolene Tam, the Natural Resources Director for the La Jolla Band of Luseño Indians, Chairman Nason and from the Esalen Tribe of Monterey County, and Kelly Udea from the UC Reserve System would like to say a few words. Here's Jolene.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me here today and seeing how the mechanism works behind the curtain. I am very proud to submit my application to the Coastal Conservancy, and thank you for the warm introduction. That takes care of half of my proposed comments. our project, Papeninga Kawewish Pokoi, is translated to the path that fox carries the fire. It is part of a regional project with our Forest Service partners, Caltrans, SDG&E, and quite a few others. We are working to address the high fuel loads along the highway primarily. And the title of the project speaks to the name of readapting the landscape to vegetation mosaics to continually support the reintroduction of fire. Our partnership hopefully will include another division of UCSD with potentially using digital twins to model fields treatment projects and allow more research for remote locations to be conducted on this project as well. So hopefully we'd love to leverage and we can continue to do great work. I am also a graduate student, a master's student in entomology, studying the gold-spotted oak borer at UC Riverside. And we need to quickly figure this problem out before GSOB comes up north to visit you guys. So the core of our solution is the return of good fire, and this project dedicates 219 acres to cultural burning. At least a quarter of the burning acres will be visible from the trading post while you're safely parked along the highway. So that has been one of my dreams, to make a highly visible stewardship project to help change the minds of the people that we need to support our projects. This investment is not just a short-term fix. It is the foundational first step in long-term fire management and is in accordance with all our fire and forest management plan drafts. And thank you. And this will also help protect the San Luis Rey River water headwaters and watershed. Part of our largest problem in the modern culture is our soil loss into the river basins and out to the sea. So with this, we help to increase the health of not just our spot of land, but the coastal waters as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. All right, are there any other comments?
Tom Little Bear Nason, can you please try speaking?
Hello, thank you, Coastal Conservancy. Thank you so much. It's Tom Little Bear Nason, Tribal Chairman of the Esalen Tribe of Monterey County. We are very honored to be able to present this to you today for approval. It is bringing beneficial cultural fire back to the land that we have recently received. We are implementing our cultural fire program. We have 11 trained tribal wildfire cultural fire technicians. We have been working off a grant from CAL FIRE for $3.5 million for workforce development and forest health. So we're combining this cultural burn project along with that. is giving us an opportunity to be able to train and continuing on our traditional ecological knowledge, our ways of bringing beneficial fire back to the land, a way we can remove the invasive species that are encroaching upon us onto these lands of the Tulisitos Creek area and Rana Creek Preserve here in Carmel Valley. We are honored to be able to even be considered for this grant because we did apply for the from the CAL FIRE to do this project, and we were bounced over to this funding source, and we're very appreciative. And I just wanted to let you know that, you know, by tribes getting the fire back, it's going a long ways to bringing back a balance that is missing from the landscape that was here for thousands of years as we tended the lands, we stewarded our lands, and we used fire as our tool. We did not have axes. We used the fire for our tools. It's a low intensity, very monitored, very little control. We're working with our local CAL FIRE unit, Monterey San Benito unit here, BEU it's known as. They have graciously hosted on to help us in the burning of the project. We're working with our local Central Coast Prescribed Fire Burn Association on this burn. And we're training lots of indigenous people. We've had first team training for cultural fire, for basic 132R firefighting certificates. We did that through the Nature Conservancy funding, working also on that. It's just a really good program, and we're very grateful, and I thank you for your consideration. Have a wonderful day. And thank you to all the staff, to Trish and Lily and all the folks that helped, and the Coastal Conservancy and all their support team. Thank you very much. I hope.
Well, thanks for your comments, too.
We have one more. Okay. Kelly Ueda, please feel free to speak.
Hi, this is Kelly Ueda. I'm just really excited to be here today. I'm from the Natural Preserve System at UC San Diego and excited to see Elliott Chaparral Reserve considered for this. Our Natural Preserve System serves to run these natural areas for teaching, research, and public service. So this is a great opportunity for us to improve wildfire resilience, to find beneficial uses for these eucalyptus trees that are all over the place in San Diego and throughout California, to pilot biochar, and in particular to engage indigenous partners in both the removal effort and the replanting effort. So we're just really excited, and I really appreciate Lily Allen and all the support in moving this forward. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other comments?
No more public comments at this
point. All right. Do I hear a motion that we approve this item? Item 9. Mr. Hallisey moved. Ms. Sterling seconds. We approve item 9. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alvis?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 9 is approved.
Okay, now, Lily, you have the next one. It seems somewhat similar to 9, isn't it? Or
yes, it is another consolidated staff report.
It's a different location, right?
It's all in the Central Coast. It's funded by our block grant from the Department of Conservation.
Okay. We have a time limitation here, so can you move through this pretty quickly?
Just hit the clicker a lot.
Okay.
staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $1,665,000 to 5 public agencies to carry out planning and implementation projects that will improve forest health and wildfire resilience in Alameda, Santa Clara, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. These projects will be funded by an external grant to the Conservancy from the Department of Conservation's Regional Forest and Fire Capacity Program, known as the RFFC program. The goal of the RFFC program is to increase the regional capacity and develop, prioritize, and implement strategies and projects that create fire-adapted communities and landscapes by improving ecosystem health, community wildfire preparedness, and fire resilience. I will briefly describe the 5 projects we are recommending for funding. The Alameda County Fire Department was awarded conservancy funding in 2023 to develop a field crew and provide chipping and fuels treatment program that directly supports homeowners and public agencies across Alameda County. The next phase of this funding would continue to support the workforce development and operations of the 12-person fuel. The Wildfire Resilience Program Capacity Enhancement Project consists of funding staff assistant at the Kachuma Resource Conservation District to carry out the RCE's mission and develop administering wildfire resilience programs and projects recommended by the Santa Barbara County Regional Priority Plan. The Santa Barbara Regional Priority Plan will help conduct fire education, provide technical assistance, and partner with other agencies. Funding this wildfire staff position will enable long-term development, coordination, and administration of wildfire resilience projects in Santa Barbara County. The Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District will develop forest health and wildfire resilience public works plan through partnership. The PWP will function as a companion to CAL FIRE's statewide vegetation treatment program and is associated with programmatic environmental impact report. The Wildfire Resilience PWP have already been established in several coastal counties and have been effective at increasing implementation projects without adverse effects to sensitive resources. The Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority will purchase equipment, including an excavator and masticator attachment that will be used to conduct fuel reduction projects along the North Fuel Break Access Road. This access road is an important part to reducing the spread of wildfire into the urbanized areas. It was used to stop the Loma Fire in 2017. The Open Space Authority will collaborate with the San Jose Conservation Corps, providing workforce development to benefits. The Upper Salinas Los Tabros Resource Conservation District will prepare a strategic plan for the San Luis Obispo Prescribed Burn Association, a new community-led network dedicated to increasing the safe and effective use of prescribed fire in San Luis Obispo County. By supporting landowners, tribal members, and local stakeholders, the project will build capacity for fuel reduction, cultural burning, and ecosystem resilience in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Do you need a glass of water?
Any questions?
You, Lily. That's a record, I think.
I read to my toddler at night, and when I'm ready to go, it's like, all right, let's 3 books.
All right. Are there any comments?
There are no public comments.
No public comments. All right. Who'd like to move item 10?
So moved.
Okay.
I can move.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. Alves?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grouden?
Aye.
Mr. Hollisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 10 is approved.
Well, thank you, Lily.
Thank you.
Good job. All right. We're going to put over items 11, 12, and 13 until after we have an executive session, which we have to have first. So could we please clear the room so we can have our private session?
Yeah, we need to have a closed session on item 13B.
Right.
And board members, Gutierrez, Groudinch, Sterling, and Harmon, I emailed you the call-in number and then texted to Marce and Joy. I didn't have your cell phone, Megan, so it should be in your email. Okay, so we're going to get this conference call started, and if you could close down your the Zoom so the conference call doesn't come over the Zoom. I think if you just mute and turn off your camera, it should work.
Okay, we'll go back into session now. And the Conservancy heard advice from our legal counsel on agenda item 13B. And gave direction to legal counsel on that item. So we'll now return to item 11, Conservancy member comments. Are there any Conservancy member comments?
If you'll allow me exactly 1 minute.
Of course.
I would like to point out that we just saw the release of the federal government's new proposed 5-year drilling plan, which proposes opening all of the California coast to offshore drilling. And that was just released an hour ago or so. And I think it's important that we pay attention to that, understanding that it's outside of jurisdiction, but obviously the potential problems we could have on our shores and unfortunately keep heading that direction.
Well, having gone through all of the commotion we went through with Secretary Watts, Secretary Hodel, the Reagan administration, all of that back in the 80s, I don't look forward to that battle again. But here it is, you know. Guess a bad penny always shows up, right?
Right.
And this administration is going to be very tough to deal with on that because they'll just go out and sign things, I think. But
very much against the public, what the public opinion tells us about it. So unfortunately, that's something we will have to deal with sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, we'll all have to get our boxing gloves on and get going. Are you dealing with that? Not that specifically, but I guess in the conference, it's probably a concern, huh?
Yes, it's been an interesting day. First, we had a fire, then we have this. So it's a fitting metaphor, unfortunately. Oh. But like I said, the public is very engaged and bodies like ours are also very engaged. So I'm hopeful.
Well, you're our representative over there.
I will say for the record, by the way, we did have a very robust California presence last week here. So just FYI, we did have the governor, the secretary of natural resources, environmental protection, and some, I think, Senator Becker. So for the record, we did have a very robust and strong productive representation here last week.
Great. How long are you going to be there?
Till tomorrow.
Oh. Oh, wow.
It's over tomorrow. Here's hoping.
No. We'll have a safe trip back.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other Conservancy member comments? Any public comments?
We have one public comment.
All right. Who's that?
Chanel West, you're free to speak.
Hello, please confirm you can hear me before starting the timer.
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Chanel West and I work for the City of Fresno Parks Department. Fresno Parks would like to provide feedback regarding the SCC's Explore the Coast grant program and recommend some steps to improve the transparency and equity of the ETC application instructions and grant scoring process. We've also provided this information as a written comment. Fresno Parks applied for the 2025 ETC grant in January. In June, we were notified that our grant application was not selected for award, and the project manager kindly reviewed with us our project scoring criteria and scoring results. Our proposal was scored by two reviewers who provided significantly different scores. SCC shared that a primary weakness of our grant project was the high cost per participant. SCC communicated that our high cost per participant resulted in our grant application being scored lower in the budget category. So given this, we are asking SCC to consider making the following four improvements to the ETC grant guidelines and scoring process to improve transparency and equity. Number one, if SCC plans to continue to use the per participant cost as a factor in scoring decisions, we recommend that you update the application instructions to include parameters for the per participant cost and to explain how this factor will affect scoring. Number two, we recommend that SCC include in their scoring process a provision that considers the necessarily higher transportation costs incurred by inland communities to ensure that inland communities are not penalized for this higher cost in the scoring process. Number three, we recommend that SCC provide more specific scoring criteria to reviewers to support greater objectivity in scores. And number four, we recommend that SCC increase the number of reviewers per application to 3 to 5 rather than only 2 to improve the fairness of the scoring process. Thank you for making the ETC grant program available to communities like ours, and we hope that you will consider our feedback. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll take that under advisement for sure. All right, are there any other public comments?
There are no other public comments.
Okay, well, I think that does it then. Our next meeting will be February 19th in Oakland again. And wishing all of you a happy Thanksgiving. The meeting's adjourned.